The following podcast is part of a special oral history program titled The RSL, A Time to Celebrate. The program documents fascinating and personal stories and experiences of veterans across South Australia. The program received funding through the Veteran and Community Grants stream in partnership with the Tanunda RSL sub-branch and the Emu Tree, and was produced by Christian Teusner. I encourage listeners to take their time to explore as many of these stories and adventures as possible. For further information, visit www.theemutree.com. Today, 17th of March, I'm in the Barossa village with Clarence Pirsch.
Yeah.
Can you tell me your date of birth, please, Clary?
On the 14th of August, 1924. And I'll be 96 in August this year.
Fantastic. So, Clary, can you tell me, first of all, could you tell me where you were born and some early childhood memories?
I was born in Black. You'll see, I have no Adam's apple. And my Adam's apple is cut out, and they had to bring me up from Black Hill on the River Murray, you know, Black Hill, Congolia, and bring me up in a horse and trap. And they brought me to the Mount Pleasant Hospital and cut me Adam's apple out. And they fed me through a tube. And when I was all over, they let Mum and Dad know, and they reckon I would never have a voice, and I got a damn good tenor voice. And I can talk loud, you know. But, you know, and when that all healed up, and I cried, and everyone in the hospital cried. Then they come and picked me up and brought me home. Yeah, and that was at Black Hill. And I was at Black Hill till I was 5 years old. And then my father shifted and took over the wheat agency at Sedan, the South Australian Farmers Union Wheat Agency. And I was billeted out at 10 years old. I was billeted out on the three of us, two of us brothers and my sister were billeted out. I went to Otto Rothy's on the farm, and I had to take his child to school 4 miles in the morning, 4 miles and milk the cows and turn the separator, and 4 miles in the morning, 4 miles at night, and bring the mail home as well. And different people, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And he had a big head, like a water head. His head was much, you'll see the photo of him later on. And with me in the back, and I was only 10, maybe 10 and a half years old.
10 years old.
And we had no money and no shoes and socks or to go to bloody school or nothing, you know. We had nothing.
This is in the 1930s now, mid-30s.
Yeah, yeah. This is after I was billeted out. And like, I went to Otto Rothy's. My sister went to, she's a year younger than me, and she went to Ross Lillycraps in the Eden Valley Hills. And all the Wallace Lillycrap, they were all sheep people, and they owned all that property. And when I was, when I turned 14, I went in straight into the shearing shed. On the 14th of August, my mum was the cook, my father was the bailer, my two brothers were the wool handlers on the table, and my father was a wool baler. And I was there looking after four shearers. This is when I was 14.
When you were 14. So yeah. What were some of your duties looking after the shearers?
I was picking up the fleeces, and I had to pick up the rams for them. You know, I was picking up the fleeces and keeping the floor clean for the four shearers. And this is at Lillycraps. And now I was just 14.
Wow.
Straight into the shearing shed.
You must have been fairly fit and healthy.
I was fit and healthy. And I'll show you when I was 14, I was smoking a pipe. And 1924 is in Otto Rothy's house, 1924. That's when that was built. And I was a big man and brought up on the edge of an axe. Like weekends, we used to go down chopping mallee, you know, and carting wood. And I never even, I never had a license. And the police in them days, I used to cart all the wood in 2 ton at a time with a little Chev 4 truck, you know. And I used to go and load all the wood up and bring it into the station. This is while I'm with Otto Rothy, you know, and I had to do that.
Were they good times, good memories?
Yeah, good memories. I worked hard the whole time, you know, and I've had a good life. And I used to help Ronnie Schultz from farm to farm. I used to go and help turn the winnower, you know, turn the winnower to separate the wheat from the cocky chaff. I've had a hard life.
How are you got all your fingers?
I got all my fingers. They're a bit all bent up from being a bricklayer. You'll hear about it when I come back to Anguston after the war.
Okay. Okay, wow, amazing. So Otto Rothy's, was that down the Sedan as well? Or where was Otto Rothy's?
That was at Sedan.
That was at Sedan.
I had to push him to school, and he used to suffer from the fits.
Okay.
And you'll see the big head he had up on the wagon, you know, a horse and trap. But I didn't have the horse and trap to take him to school. I used to push him to bloody school on a push bike on a seat, and then he would suffer from convulsions.
Oh.
And I used to have to stop him from swallowing his tongue.
Wow.
And this is...
That's a lot of responsibility.
A lot of responsibility. And I had to do this every bloody day till I was 14.
So when you were 14, you then moved into the shearing, in the shearing sheds?
As soon as I turned 14.
Mm-hmm.
As soon as I turned 14 and I left school, we had no money to send me to university or to Adelaide. I had no socks or shoes or nothing, you know, to go to school. We had nothing when we left Black Hill.
How many students were in the school?
There was about 72 in Sedan School, 72 people. And I had a photo of all those children, you know, and I give it to Edna Zeidel years ago when I shifted to Moonda.
Yep. Late 30s now.
Yep. Well, then I went to Lobethal, and I was a very powerful man in my day, and I dug potatoes.
Hard craft.
First of all, I never went to Lobethal. What happened to me, this is a long time ago, what happened to me, I went to me aunt, my mother's sister's, and I milked 22 cows with me cousin. That's 11 cows each at Port Augusta. And I went from home there. And after that, she sold the cow business. And I went to Oakton Hills to a sheep and cattle station. And I sank dams there. You'll see all the photos in here. The work I done with a scoop and a plough and a homemade dam sinking plant on sleepers.
Mm-hmm.
And I got photos of it in here, you know. Well, that's on the Morgan Whaler pipeline. That's some like me. This is all up at the other side of Port Germain. you know, the pipeline through the Flinders Ranges.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's when I worked. And that's me in the bloody dam, ploughing the dam up with a homemade. And at one stage, the steel cable come from the tripod, you know, and the one on the side of the dam, there's a steel cable, and that went to another wheel, and that give you your straight. And we went around the dam twice and to get the depth. And that's me there ploughing. And how old would I have been? I wasn't even 16.
Looks like really hard work.
Hey, I've worked hard all my bloody life, and I don't bullshit to no one. I don't bullshit to no one.
And it's fabulous photos. Right?
Yeah.
Terrific.
Yeah.
How many years were you working on the pipeline?
I went there as I'm going around. Now, that's me at 16. I lump wheat for my father after I finished up here on the sheep and cattle station. I come home and I had £80 in, you know, that I earned that year, right, more or less.
Mm-hmm.
£80, and that was me. And I had a 47 and a half inch bloody chest. Man, I could crush people to death.
You look very fit.
Hey?
You look very fit.
I was digging potatoes at Noski's at Lobethal, and that ninepence a bloody bag. And I'd pick them up with me teeth and carry it over to the truck.
So when did you enlist? Can you tell me about
that? I enlisted when I did that round. I come back and my brother was on the Morganwella. My oldest brother, Otto, was working on the Morganwella pipe as a welder.
Mm-hmm.
And then I went up there and they employed me as a striker in the blacksmith shop, you know, sharpening the tools and everything. And I was like a striker in the blacksmith shop. So I took on welding and learnt the welding trade, and that's when I improved myself, you know.
Mm-hmm.
When I come back, and after I went to Lobethal and all them places, I finished up on the Morganwella, the first pipeline that went through to Whyalla,
mm-hmm.
not the second one.
The first one.
The first one. And that's me. At you might as well say, between, you know, 16 and I was a powerful man. Another brother. There's four of us brothers up there. We joined the army. Four of us out of one family. We was in the army.
Did you
sign we up all together? Come back.
Did you sign up together?
No. The other ones were older. And Otto never, ever joined. But Vic's number was 600 and something. And he was in the 2nd 10th Battalion. And he married a Lobethal girl. An Eisenberg. A woman called Eisenberg. Alma Eisenberg. And he married her.
Mm-hmm.
This is after I come back.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'd been away.
But you were too young at that point.
I was too young to be in the army.
Mm.
So I worked and got a job on the Morganwella pipeline. Mm. And I stopped there until it finished. And I went right through the Flinders and Port Augusta and the last stage at Lincoln's Gap. We camped out in the Myall and the Mulga bushes, you know, at Lincoln's Gap.
Mm-hmm. And this is really vivid. Like you remember it like it was yesterday.
Yeah, mm. I can remember everything.
Do you think about these days often?
Yeah, I think about them. I can't forget, you know, the war. A lot of things happened in between, you know, when I did, you know, when the manpower took me over, and I hit my fist on the desk. I was in the army within 2 days. And they said to me, do you want to join the AIF? And I said, I might as well join what the rest of my brothers are in the AIF. And my brother was Arthur from Tanunda. He was in he went to Darwin, and Harold went to Japan after they dropped a bomb, and I went to New Britain, you know, before the end of the war. And I landed at Jackano Bay in New Britain, and we did our training there. But in the meantime, when I'd done my training in the army before then, I went to Cowra, and the Japs broke out, and I was supposed to go home on my first holiday, and they stopped it, and we had to round them up, and there was 332 got bloody killed. In Cowra. I still got the bloody hat with a badge on the front, a Cowra badge. And because I was 19 and a half years old at that time, you know, and joined up, I was 19 and a half, and I, you know, when I joined up, when the pipeline finished, and on my first holiday, I finished up, I had a, you know, they broke out and there's 332. And because I was 19 years old, I was a powerful man, and there was two of us on the trucks that night, you know, after they rounded them all up, and we was on duty all the time, you know, so that they couldn't get into the camp and into the dumps. You know, the power dumps, you know, where they kept all the guns and bullets and everything. And they kept me behind on one truck, and there was two trucks bringing them in at 25 at a time, you know, and we were unloading them off the bloody trucks. And all they dug was trenches on the side of the hill at Cowra. And we put them in there at night, you know, like buried them at night under lights. And then after that, I come home and I got engaged to a girl that I knew, you know, and only knew a few hours. Stepfather, but he invited me home from Woodville, you know, while I was at the Woodville. And he invited me home for a meal. And I only met her and I thought, Clary, it's about time you hang your hat up. So I got engaged. It cost me 7 and 6. There was no diamonds around in them days. And I went back and I finished my training at Cowra. And then I went to Canungra. And did the war training, and we had instead of being there a month, we went to Cowra, the Cowra after that, we went to Canungra, and we was supposed to be there a month on jungle training, and we were cut short, and we went to Strathpine and caught the bloody boat to Jackano Bay in New Britain. And I just forget what boat, whether it was the West Australia or I got a boat. I know.
Do you remember the journey? Do you remember what that was like?
The journey to where?
You were saying Jackano Bay.
Yeah, I remember like? There was a lot of us on the boat, a whole battalion of us, you know, and we landed at Jackano Bay in New Britain, and that night a couple of float planes come over from Rabaul, and we had trenches to go to, and but the the air mob, you know, they shot off their bloody air guns, you know, their long distance guns, and they turned around, and there was two float planes come over Jackano Bay, just after we landed, sort of thing.
How did you feel? Was it
well?
Was it pretty? Was it exhilarating? Was it frightening? Was it
no?
Exciting?
Well, yeah. Yeah, we had trenches to go into, you know, and then from there, Jackano Bay, we was only there, and we went to the toll plantation, and there was a terrible fight there back in 1943. I think at the toll plantation, there was a lot of our men, you know, not our men, but the people that were in that island. They were murdered at the toll plantation, and that's when it was like a little war. And I think Rabaul was bombed and smashed to pieces, and the ships and bloody everything was sunk in the bloody harbour at Rabaul. And, you know, it's all this is just, it's coming back, you know. And then we had to go from one side, and the military was, the fighting was all over the other side, the Gazelle Peninsula. They called it the Gazelle Peninsula, and that's where it took us 21 mile. It took us 7 days to bloody get there around the volcanoes and through all the creeks, and you had to keep going, you know, through all the mud and water, and we eventually got to the Gazelle Peninsula, and then we took over from a mob. They were coming back, and they all had hookworm, and they were on field punishment because when they was in Queensland, some mob backed up, you know, and they was on the train, supposed to go away, but I don't know what the hell happened. But they was sent at a place called Gloucester. They drove the Japs back right to the Gazelle Peninsula, and we took over from them. And they were bringing them back on stretchers with hookworm and every bloody thing. You know, it wasn't nice. And they drove them, the Japanese, there was thousands of bloody Japs on, they couldn't leave the island because they were all stuck there. They didn't have no submarines. When we took over Rabaul, there was nothing. Rabaul was like a city, and there was nothing. All the boats and everything, like a little Pearl Harbor. This is all in Rabaul, you know, when we took over Rabaul. And I went up there to the toll plantation in the Katoomba, I think. Then we walked across the island and took over this other poor battalion, you know. And then we was in the front lines all the time. So I got the badge there for active service. I got the gold badge. I got everything. I got five medals and the war medals, you know, the two stars, and I got three other medals and two war service medals, like action medals. And that's how it, and the war finished on the night of my 21st birthday, on the 14th of August 19, and I was in the bunkers, in the bloody trenches, and we had a couple of stouches. We had 25 pounders shooting over our bloody heads, and you know, we was in action. And the aeroplanes that come from New Zealand, they were New Zealand pilots, with Valdi's Vengeance, with a downswept wing, and the wings go out, and they were strafing. We was one side of the bloody great big. I just forget whether it was Petardi River, but I can't remember the bloody name. Petardi River. They were blowing hell out of the with the 25-pounders and everything, and we was one side of the creek, and they was the other side. And then one night, me mate, he went for a bloody crap. He went on, like, we used to go back to a camp and all dugouts, and we'd go out all day and hiding in the jungle, and this side of the river, and there's four or five Japanese come over, and he went and had a crap, and he was burying his bloody crap, and of course I was a machine gunner, and he bloody used his gun, and the Japs used a grenade and threw it, and bloody got him in the groin. I haven't seen him since, but he would be dead by now. I'm still alive. Yeah, but wow. He come back, and the corporal said to me, I was a lance corporal at the time, and I finished up. They made me a corporal, and I finished up a corporal perch. I was in charge of all the joggers coming from New Guinea and the low pointers, you know, the low pointers. All the high pointers were going home, and the low, and I never come back till the following year, and we had a clean up all the Japanese stuff, you know, like shove it into the ocean, and I brought a couple of swords back.
Are you okay talking about this?
Yeah, but you never forget it. You never forget it.
You said to me a moment ago, on the 14th of August, the day of your 21st birthday.
That was the end of the war. And they flew us back to Jackano Bay. They flew us back in the seaplanes. They had a heap of seaplanes up there. And they flew us back from Jackano, like they come from Jackano Bay, and 25 of us fully laden, instead of walking back over all the bloody mountains and through all the bloody rivers, instead of walking back, they flew us back in a twin engine seaplane, 25 at a time. They flew us back to Jackano Bay, and then from Jackano Bay, we went straight to Rabaul and took over Rabaul at Christmas, at one Christmas time, Christmas after the war finished. And we finished up, and that's where I stayed. And there was 90 miles of tunnels, and 90 miles of tunnels in Rabaul itself. And they had about six or seven submarines beached on the, they all were blown up and everything, you know, and they had no aeroplanes left because there were zeros and everything, because Rabaul was like a little, you know, they blew everything up. There was no concrete, no houses, no nothing standing. That everything was blown up. This is in Rabaul. Now, and that is the truth. And there's when the Matupi went up, an island come up in the middle of the harbour, and that was all bubbling, hot water, like in New Zealand, hot water bubbling, and all the nurses, and you know, once we had a hospital in Rabaul. And we had, there was five, and I think there was about 5,000 or 10,000, and compounds at Kokopo, where all the Japs, we had them walking around and picking up every blade of grass around our tents and everything, you know. They were everywhere. And there must have been on the island, I don't know how many, but there was near enough 10,000 in each Kokopo compound. Oh God, they were everywhere. All the Japanese. Yeah, I was a tough bloody man in my bloody. Nothing bloody stand in my bloody way. I was in charge of the MPs. They made me in charge of the MPs. A sergeant come home and they made me a corporal, and I was in charge of the military police on, you know, because I had a big voice and parade all the jokers coming over from New Guinea and Borneo, all the low pointers, you know. And I was in charge of those, more or less. I could have finished up a sergeant major or bloody anything. But I come home. Yeah, and I come home, got married straight away. And I was just over 21 when I got married. And the wife was a year younger than me. And we had 67 years of married life. And she was 87 when she passed away, and that is 7 years ago.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear
that. 7 years ago.
What was your wife's name?
Betty Lindsay, Scottish.
67 years married.
Yeah, I was 67 years married from the time I got home. I got married straight away. And there was not one of her half-sisters. She, like her stepfather, invited me home, and her father was still alive, and her mother was a terrible bloody woman. We had a lot of trouble with her, and there's not one of her half-brothers or sisters, so I just picked her up and I changed my religion. She was Catholic. I went to Anguston and I got married at the Church of England, and I was Lutheran, and I got married in the Church of England, and we had our wedding breakfast, and there's only 9 people at the wedding breakfast at Sedan, at Mum and Dad's. That's my life. And woe betide anyone that wants to bloody change it. But until I come here, I looked after myself, and cooked for myself and done everything myself. I couldn't hang the washing up on the line any bloody more. And I used to do all my own ironing, my own cooking. And I was in a village in between the two port roads. And because I got the gold card, because I was in action and, you know, seen action, been there and done that, and it finished on the night of my birthday. That was it. You know, I come home and got married. Yeah, she's been gone 7 years. And that was me when I was working on the Morgenweller pipeline. And I've been in the ring a few times, you know, and I've had a few brothers boxers, you know, and I done a bit of boxing in me day. And that's because of me bloody big bloody ears. But I've had a tough bloody life.
Certainly a strong man, yeah, Clary. Yeah. You really are. It's such an honour to meet you.
See, a lot of photos in here of, that's a place I bought at, that's at Sedan. You see all the reedles, can you see, and the bushies? There's 4 of us there and 7 of reedles. He was a minister and had 15 children. He was German minister, and as all the Riedels. And when I was 14, one of his, he was a lieutenant in the army, and they blamed me one night. I was still going to Sunday school, you know, like Sunday, and they blamed me for pinching a leather overcoat, And they found that in the Jokers. He lived about 4 or 5 miles outside of Sedan on the way to Swan Reach. And they found all the bloody women's pants and everything. He was a single man. And they found it all up in the bloody ceiling. And he blamed me. He was a lieutenant. And I up and bloody knocked him down. And I was only 14. And the copper said to me, one day you'll get, and that day has never ever bloody come. I've had fights in the main street of Lowethal, you know, different ones. And they say, even in Port Augusta when I was bloody kid, you know, milking cows for me auntie, I was only 14. And one of them was deaf and dumb. And they said, this joker's gonna bloody knock you bloody down and take a peg out. He never ever took a peg out of me because he finished out in the middle of the bloody road from milking cows. And I had a 47 and a half inch chest at that bloody time. Oh, that's all my brothers. One of my brothers here, my youngest brother, he died years ago. And he was used to fight at the East End Market when Chief Little Rolf used to come here with all the feathers on his head. Oh, we're a tough bloody family. That's, you know, my wife and some of my children. Yeah, Rodney, he was the works manager for Hanson Youngkin. Okay. And they give him a brand new four-wheel drive when he retired at 68. Give him a brand new bloody four-wheel drive for all the work he's done. That's my sister. Yeah, that's Mavis. Mavis and Clem, and I think that's myself. That's Clem, my brother. He died just at 63. These are more or less family photos. That was me up at, I retired at 60, and I went to Moonda Bay, and I lived on the ocean shore, and that's Betty. She went as a queen, and I went as Barney Rubble. That's my mum and me, and that was Betty when I first met her. You know, we got married and come back to Semaphore, and we lived there for a little while. And I worked at Holden's for a fortnight, and that was while we was living there. And that's our wedding photo. Oh, that's me fishing here with barramundi. That's a barramundi. I had about 5 or 6 caravans all together, toured all this side of Australia.
Is that your car?
Yeah.
That was an old XA Falcon, was it?
Yep, XA Falcon. I had all big 6-cylinder cars. Had the big Chev, the Biscayne Chev 58, and I had the same model, only it wasn't a high speed. Here's me at 14, smoking a pipe. That's me at 14. That's when I left, a photo I had taken, and, you know, I chopped a lot of bloody mallee with an axe as well. And that was me at 6, up on the station, halfway through 16. That's me on the station. And here's the photo of the head of the body, you know, and that's his size of his head. And I had to take him to school and milk the cows in the morning and bloody everything. They're all dead. And that's me there. That's me. And I'm pushing this kid to school. And that was the old shed, you know, straw sheds. And that was all in the go. And here's some of the bullocks I drove and made all the drains. You know, Charlie Adjett, he was the man, you know, that owned the bullocks, and you know, I've driven bullocks, and You know, made all the drains into the dam with the bullocks. Charlie Adget was the main driver, but I've driven them as well. You'll see a lot of photos of caravans and different caravans. And that's the house. I sold the house. I built a house at Angaston. And I took out an insurance policy and I mortgaged that insurance policy. And it was only for $2,000. And I'll show you the house I bought at Angaston. But I bought this place here for £5,000. And I built that stone wall after I learned to trade at Angaston. I was in Angaston for 7.5 years because I had to change my trade, you know. So I took on bricklaying, plastering and stonework and everything. And that's the boss. And that house I bought for £5,000 and I sold it for $110,000. $110,000. And I bought a place at Moonta $74,000, and I sold that. I put a skin around it outside, plastic, because it was asbestos, you know, and the deep four, you know, like about 4 inches asbestos, then the curve in mm-hmm. and the curve out, another 4 inches, and I covered that over with a 18 foot. Or something, they were long, and you cut them to suit and everything, and that cost me $11,000, and I sold that for $110,000, yeah, and that's how I made. And there's some of the old cars I had, you know, good old Fords. And
vinyl roof?
Yeah, yep. Yeah, I put a new roof on. My wife worked at the Cyclones. That's the house I built at Angaston in 7 years. And the bricklayer, the man I worked for was Dowitz. And he was in the Air Force during the war, but his father was a builder. And I went to Angaston for 7.5 years, and I made my own bloody bricks and built the bloody house. And he finished it off for me because he was out of work. Mm-hmm. And he finished it off. But I did all the footing and a lot of the brickwork and everything. And he said, Clary, you know, I've run out of work. And he today I wouldn't even know that place because it's all remodeled and done. See, that's just after the war. See, I don't tell no bloody lies. See, and this is our home at Sedan, and now it's heritage. We own this house and this old house here, and us kids slept over in here, and there was a dam alongside of us, and just up was the flour mill, Lauchie's flour mill. Well, they finished up in the prisoner war camp, you know, during the war, and they never come back, but they fired the mill up again afterwards. But beautiful cars. See, that was a Biscayne Chev, Biscayne 58, and that was a Blue Flame Motors, the first car I did 100 mile an hour in. Here it is again. Gee, that was a beautiful car. Big, looks yank. Yeah, well, you don't get them like that today. Oh, and I also had a Billette bought for my wife, and I only paid $150. And it still had the plastic covers on the doors. And I paid $150 for it, a billet. Oh. Yep, oh yeah, all over the place. We travelled, you know, whenever we could. Mm. Christmas times, we'd all go to Moana, and that's where we used to spend a lot of Christmases. And we used to go and run the caravan park, the three of us families, brothers, and we used to go there every year. And we'd let him spend a couple of nights out, and we'd run the caravan. And he'd say, you know, I got a big caravan, and different people would say to him, look, he said, we got no problems here. We got a jugger here that'll lift the bloody thing in for you. There's some more. This is in the caravan park. You know, real old models going back years. Or this.
So you just said this book you're showing me is called this.
Yeah, the 90th birthday of the works of the singing bricky. I used to sing. I had a beautiful bloody voice.
Can you give me a verse of a song that maybe one of the songs you used to sing?
It's now or never. Come hold me tight. Kiss me, my darling. Be mine tonight. Tomorrow will never be the same. It's now or never. My love won't wait. Hey, I got the power there.
Beautiful.
Hey.
That was
and
magnificent.
I don't sing, very seldom sing here. Now that's one number. And hear my song, Violetta, and When I Grow Too Old to Dream, and some of them old numbers, you know, Bing Crosby numbers, I sing. But I don't sing just for the love of bloody singing. I could have trained me voice, but we had no bloody money. And I lost me bloody Adam's apple.
Oh, thank you for sharing that.
Yeah, but you'll see some of that keep going through here. And there's some of the houses I built here. I built them in Corn, Port Augusta, all Piri and Clare and Murray Bridge, Tailem Bend. Anywhere in South Australia, they'd load up all me scaffold up and I... See, this here is all up at Belair, and true, when you go to Belair, you'll see those buildings. There's two of those put together, and they joined, and there's a walkway in between them. I built that. That's just before you go to the pub, you know, and it's down on in the gully, and it's just off the main road, and that... There's two of those, like two of those big buildings put together. One runs into the other one. And that's it. But hey, just from the Belair petrol station, just up from there. Yeah, I built the bloody thing. I've worked my bloody guts out. And people, then they'll wonder why I get me power. If when I shake a hand, they say, Jesus, you got power. And even... I don't bullshit to no one. I don't have to bullshit because I can still bloody throw a bloody punch.
This is a great book. This is fantastic. It's so
the
good you have this.
The Singing Bricky.
The Singing Bricky. Oh.
And I'll tell you another thing. I was the only man in Vale Park up by the Modbury Hospital and on the opposite side of where the hospital is. In Vale Park, I used to build, they used to have big concrete pillars and right over the front door would be a slab of concrete. And I was the only man that could pick up one of those bloody pillars and put it where it had to bloody go. I was the only bloody man that could bloody all do it.
That would have been a sight.
All the pillars, you know. And I used to build up a little heap of bricks and carry it over there and then stand up on there and put it underneath the concrete and slide it in and then pack it up with stuff. And I'm the only man that ever bloody will pick one of those up. No one else could ever bloody come near me. You can see a lot of the buildings there, you know, the big two-story places.
I saw that, yeah. I just have it. This one's the 65th wedding anniversary.
Yeah, yeah.
Betty and Clary.
I tell you bloody what, mate. I've been around and I don't tell bloody lies, stories. I tried to keep as near to my age as properly, you know. I picked up a joker, he was 24 stone, and this was in Ardrossan, and I built houses in Ardrossan and all over South Australia. And this joker said to me one night, and I used to put your hands in your eyebrows like this and pull your elbows back, and I used to pick you up and rick your back, you know, like pick you up, and I'd have to stand on something a little bit of, and he said, this joker said to me, I weigh 23 stone, and he was 6 foot something, and he said, I weigh 23 stone, you wouldn't be able to pick me up, and I bloody well picked him up. I picked him up and done his back, straightened his back for him. Picked him up, I stood behind him and got up on the thing and picked him up with his elbows here on the side, and you hold your head on your eyes like this, mm-hmm. and I picked him up and dumped him. 23 bloody stone.
That must have been such a surprise for him to start with, and then such a relief.
Well, this used to happen where all these buildings, you know, they'd come on, they'd have to try and get them down off the roof, and I'd build a little heap of bricks up and do the same thing and pick them up by their elbows, and they'd do a couple of circles and fixed up.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You could hear your bones cracking, you know, and straightening out. And I can back my bloody words up no matter what I say or what I do. And as I said in the Albert Hotel, as a joker, tore my shirt off one bloody time. And when I knocked him down, I just turned around. He tore my shirt right off. Only me mate, Doug MacDonald, he worked as a mechanic. And he had a shirt, he went and got a shirt. Anyhow, when he dropped a schooner of beer, as I knocked him down, the glass broke on the floor and I didn't know. And the next thing, Peter Bryan, Peter's son, you know, not the father, he was a bloody good all-rounder too, Peter Bryan. And the young Peter was never like his old man. And he come around to me and he said to me, you're standing in a pool of blood. And I tore all my bloody heel off. And they had to go and send me up to the bloody hospital, Elizabeth Hospital, to get bloody fixed up.
Stitched up. That was in the Alberton Hotel?
This is the Alberton Hotel. And I never ever looked for a fight, but it didn't take long to bloody finish it.
Can I ask you, you've mentioned the Alberton Hotel a few times. So did you used to go to the football at Alberton and see the Magpies play?
I was a member of the bloody Port Club. And I lived for 10 years when I shifted to Moonda, and I come back and I bought this place. It cost me $200,000 to get in. And that was in between the old Port Road, the creek, you know, and they cut all those trees down.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And in between the two Port Roads, and that was Queenstown Avio, Westport.
Mm-hmm.
And I was there for 10 bloody years barbecuing and calling bingo. I called bingo for 10 bloody years.
And where was that? The bingo was where?
Was at the
Alberton Hotel?
No. Bingo in the club. You know, in the village.
Okay.
We had our own bingo.
Queenstown.
Yeah, Queenstown.
Mm.
Yeah, Queenstown. And that was, I was there for 10 bloody years, and I barbecued and bloody done everything there.
What year was this? What in Queenstown?
Well, when I come from there to come into here.
Can I just say, I have got so many amazing stories there from you. Thank you so much.
I say, I don't bullshit to no one.
Oh, I can see that, yeah.
I don't bullshit. You tell it like it is. Lies. I've told you my truth. I've had a little bit of sex life, and I started off young, being on the farm, and I was only 14 when I started. And sleeping in between, you know, women, and that because they always had parties and there's too many people there. And you're sleeping. I know all about sex, and I seen cows and bulls and bloody bulls roaring up and down, scratching the bloody ground up. Bloody hell. But I started my first sexual thing was at 14, and that's not bullshit.
I won't ask for the details.
No, I can't tell you who or what.
Can you tell me what your service number was? Because I have to write this down.
SX33607.
SX33607.
I got the gold card there, and I was a corporal when I left the bloody army. I've earned what I've bloody got, every bloody bit of it. I got invited to the government house. I got an identification and everything. That's my bloody gold card. And I with DVA, I got everything covered. You know, they even bought me the electric chair, that chair over there. Everything is done through my teeth and everything. And that's my gold card, isn't it?
Hmm? Your DVA health card.
Yeah.
And just crop it.
47 and a half inches I was around the chest, expanded. That's the work I used to do. And I had to do it. And I had four teeth knocked out with the steel cable that come across from the anchor block. And it knocked four teeth out, and when I breathed, I was breathing through my gums, and they never took me to a hospital. I was too far away from the hospital.
That's a good shot.
Beep, 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 beep. Yeah, well, I did a bit of boxing, and I got a few cancers on my ears, and that's true. I worked at Brick Lane for 26 years in the building trade, and working for myself all over South Australia.
Right.
And I had to work or no money coming.
You were self-employed?
I was self-employed. Oh. And unions, I never give a stuff about them.
Okay, you'll be 96 in August.
Yes.
Can I ask you for one bit of advice that so when people listen to this, what is a word of advice you can pass on?
There's no advice. It's just hard work. You know, I've looked after myself all my life and my wife, you know, and my children. And they never went without same. And my oldest daughter is 72. She'll be 73. And my youngest daughter has just turned 60, and she lives at Donovan, 500 kilometres. You know, I don't give no. It's just bloody hard work, and to make every winning post a winning post. And I was a good builder, as far as bricklaying and plastering. And stonework, I got photos of a lot of stonework, you know, homes I built and everything. And there's no wisdom to it. I just loved working for a living. And it hasn't, I will be 96 in August.
Clary Persh, thank you so much for talking to us.
No worries.
It's been an absolute pleasure.
I'd love to shake you by the hand, but No. They say no, but that doesn't worry me.
You have been listening to The RSL, A Time to Celebrate, 2020.